Every team, every topic, everywhere. This is Believe.
Hey y'all, welcome back to another episode of Believe in K-pop. As I was about to record this, I was like, should I create like a producer, like not producer, sorry, like a YouTube or like other podcasts have it too, where they're like essential guides for recent converts. Welcome back to the K-pop cast. You're you something, 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 or like, let's get it, let's go. Like, I don't know. You know how they have their little like, what's up groupies? I don't know. Or DK news, like those kinds of things. Like, should I do that? I don't think I should. We're not at that point yet. But what we are at today is an interview with an Indian K-pop fan slash writer slash curator of content of sorts for fans in India. Her name is Anthea Isaac, and she took the time to talk with me about her journey within K-pop. And so I'm really excited to talk to her, or I'm happy that I was able to talk to her. I'm happy that you guys will get a chance to hear from her. But if you guys have any suggestions on people to interview, I'm thinking about doing like a consultant type thing, like interviewing K-pop quote unquote consultants, because there are a couple of that, you know, deem themselves as such. So I would like to hear what they, you know, about what they do. Let me know if you guys think that's interesting. Also, I'm going to get back on my little entertainment deep dives. Like I said, I think my next one was going to be YG. I was debating between medium-sized companies and YG, but I'm going to do YG. And I was just kind of perusing just to see how much work it would have to take. And yeah, the least amount of videos a YG group has is Winners with like 220. The most is like 720-something with Big Bang. And so I was like, okay, well, my work is cut out for me this week. So time to peruse through the YG YouTubes and see what they do. If you remember from the episode with Kenny and Dre back around KCON LA time back in August 2019, Kenny was like, you know, I give a lot of credit to YG because with 21 and Big Bang, they were the ones that kind of started out. They're like, they were the ones that started out the vlogging sort of thing for K-pop. And where it is today. So I'm going to dive into that. I'm not going to do 21. Like I said, I'm only going to do kind of active groups. And so, yeah, that's what I'm going to do. But thank you guys for listening. Enjoy this. And we'll see you next week. What's up, guys? Welcome back to Believe in K-pop. We have another guest for us today. This time, we've had a couple of international, I guess not American guests, are based in the U.S., but we do have Anthea Isaac, who is actually in India right now, and she's from India. She is Indian, and she would not be on here if she did not write about K-pop or manage anything K-pop related. So thank you, Anthea, for coming on. Let me finish. I need to finish introducing you. You write for The Craze magazine, who we would have had on the podcast last week. You also write for Destination K-pop India, which is an Indian-based K-pop site. And then you also are the founder and curator of Let's K-pop India, which is another K-pop website as well. So thank you so much for joining.
Thank you. Thank you, Emily. It was a beautiful introduction, and I am super excited to be part of this podcast. Thank you. Thank you so much.
No, of course. I think it's very interesting. We had a phone conversation about a week ago, but I told you I'd started watching, and I'm sure a lot of people have kind of talked about this, and maybe it's annoying for you at this point because it's been around for so long, but in the KBS sort of miniseries they did called Exciting India, they, within it, you know, obviously Minho from SHINee was there, Jonghyun from CNBLUE, which it's kind of, you know, I realized it later on about him that he was part of that Burning Sun sort of thing. But, you know, and Kyuhyun, Super Junior, Sungyu from Infinite, and Suho from EXO, they were all there. And they said that, you know, when they first got there, the first day, they were like, the Hallyu wave isn't non-existent. This was back in 2015. It's not non-existent in India, but it's concentrated in the northern part. Is that still true?
I would partially agree with that because, no, like, I'm not sure if it is still true because we do have a strong base in South India. And I'm personally from South India, so we have a strong base building up right now. And maybe, you know, like in the episode, as always, we get to have this question, as you mentioned before. And it was such a kind of a situation during those years, mm-hmm. and it started spreading later on. And even now, you can find the base stronger in North India because it started quite earlier, and we have different fan clubs and fan pages who take the responsibility of helping them to come together as one, yeah. and representing them. So when you compare South India, we don't have such strong base compared to the North one. We have strong ones in South, but comparatively it is quite less because of the delay in the where fans got into K-pop, and mm-hmm. there are still groups and fan clubs that are building up their own platform, and that's why it is kind of seemingly north-based kind of wave. But I do have few examples where I got 7 fans from South India, actually contributed a quite amount with US-based. I got 7s to actually put up Got 7 in a billboard. That's what I heard. And it was kind of cool because mm-hmm. It was basically always the North Indian fan pages do that. But recently I got to know that even South Indian fans are trying to bring up money, donate to various places, go visit orphanages and stuff. So it is kind of getting recognized. And we had a recent Mont concert in Bangalore. Mm-hmm. And it was actually one of the very few concerts that we have in South India. So the stigma that Northeast is the very beginning of this wave is true, and it is there still now, because you can always see that places like Dimapur and Manipur being the actual stop where the groups stand there. They come and visit, they definitely make a visit in Manipur or Dimapur. And additionally, they kind of consider Mumbai and Bangalore later. So, yeah, it is there, but we are kind of growing, and I think it's kind of coming up really well right now.
So you mentioned Mont having a concert. When I think of the K-pop groups that have come, or K-pop acts that have come to India, there's Snooper, there's Intuit, or 24K, Mont, Card, and Alexa. These are all, except for maybe Card. The other ones, and Alexa is slowly growing, but the other ones, are sort of smaller groups. People know them, but they're smaller. Why do you believe, and this is kind of part of a larger question, I guess in the context of the smaller groups coming, why, and the fact that a lot of people have said, or a couple of articles have said, that the reasoning behind why K-pop isn't coming as frequently to India is because there seems to, even though there is a fan base there, the way the currencies and the payback would work wouldn't be as profitable. It would almost be a loss for a lot of groups, especially with the productions they put together. Why do you think in that case, smaller, likely less profitable groups, or likely groups with less money, would be coming to India rather than the more popular ones?
This is totally my opinion, but of course, we made a discussion in Seoul Beats website, and I was part of the roundtable conference thing where we discussed about this particular issue.
You work with Seoul Beats too?
No, I was just invited to be part of that roundtable.
Okay. Oh, cool. I like them.
Yes. So, yeah, we spoke about it around 2019, June, I guess. So the article was up during June. So yes, the currency actually plays a very big role, if we should agree about it. And as I always mention that smaller groups find it easy to walk in and spread their popularity, because according to me, I think that smaller groups find it necessary to make themselves established in India and into various parts. If you can say, there are much more smaller groups that try to get into European market or even American market with smaller venues and stuff, because they want to establish themselves by getting there. But when we compare larger groups, they don't actually need to go and persuade the fans to you know, like make them their fans, like without even mentioning, like we Indian fans actually crave for the popular artists to actually spell out our country name or our culture in any way. And we kind of should agree to that. When a popular artist kind of spells out India or I love Indian curry or I know Bollywood or yeah. I know I listen to Bollywood music, we go crazy. That's all we need. Mm-hmm. But when it comes to smaller groups, I don't think we concentrate. It is kind of stereotypical, but the whole world is behind big groups, and that's the same with Indian market too. So these kind of groups also consider, you know, like India being the second populated country. I think they really know that there are lots and lots of people who can actually, you know, like profit them in being a bigger fan base. So that's why they step into India. And with a currency gap, it is actually also easy to set up and organize an event in India, because the money you invest is going to be less than you when you compare with America or Europe. Mm. You know, like comparatively with the profit, it is also easy to set up and organize events and concerts because it's actually going to charge you less. According to me, I'm not sure, I have never been behind any production or organizations before. I think that small groups actually kind of margin their profit to like actually take back the money they have invested. That should be their major idea, not to end up in a loss, but you know, like invest the money and take back with few, you know, like a marginal profit. That would be their main idea. Or just fans, you know, like reaching out to fans might be their priority, and the later comes the profit. When we compare bigger groups, it is not like they need fans first and they need the profit later. So it's like it switches, the priority and the needs switch. That's what I guess. That's why, you know, like smaller groups find it easy to step into Indian market and to put it up with examples. And you know, like Intuit was not that well-known group in India before, and even Alexa, people knew her, of course, they had, you know, like fans in and around, but once they stepped into India and they, you know, like blew our minds away, then the fans got crazy. Oh. And Intuit had their own Indian fan page, and people are kind of having their own challenges, projects running, birthday projects for the members, and things started blooming up only when they stepped into India. And VAV also has, you know, like they have fan pages for each and every member. Yeah, so they have each and every fan member's fan page, and they get together for birthday projects. So, you know, like I was a VAV fan way before they got, you know, like they stepped in India. Mm-hmm. And I couldn't find a, you know, like a stable Indian fan page before. But later when they came here and performed, and then they, you know, like stole the girl's heart, they had their own Indian page, and it became more solid and more active right now. So maybe I think I answered your question. Did I?
Yeah,
or...
you did. That's so interesting. It's like, it's the reverse. It's like you have to, like the fan might not know you, but once you come, then they're a fan. Like, and it's just the fact that you guys are being acknowledged, you know, and VAV is a pretty, you know, popular group. The fact that you're being acknowledged is enough to make you a fan in some cases. And so I wonder, with these concerts, when they do come, are they sold out or close to selling out?
Yeah, actually, the organizers are doing a very good job in India. I should definitely appreciate Namaste and Pink Box. Pink Box have been doing this job for almost years, and Namaste just bloomed this year. And they are the ones who brought in Intuit and Alexa.
Okay.
So they are coming up with creative ideas, and they are able to, you know, like sell out stadiums. And to, you know, like to note, actually, 24K did not have their concert in India. They, you know, like announced that they were coming to Bangalore, and even I was super excited. And I remember those days really well. It was just a year before. Uh-huh. And unfortunately, they were not able to establish themselves before they could step in. You know, like it is necessary for the members to at least, you know, like give a little glimpse, like we should just go and check out this group. So that's that kind of intuition must actually kindle the fans. So 24K was that event was not able to do it, and they had some trouble in selling the tickets, and so they had to stop the concert from happening. So they actually never came to India. Actually it's sad, because you know, like after that, you know, like after a few months, they got the members have been changed, and it was quite sad.
So one of the things that you kind of mentioned to me, and I was spoken with another, with an Indian army, I should say, she stated that her parents weren't the most receptive of her being a K-pop fan, and I know that you might feel the same way in some cases. So let's say when there is a concert happening, and the girl that I spoke to, the army, she did say that like it's not just her. There's a lot of, you know, Indian parents that are kind of just like used and, you know, kind of restrictive of, you know, their children supporting K-pop and, you know, in whatever way. And so it's kind of difficult to, like she said, when the BTS movie came out, it was a whole thing. She had to drive all the way to, you know, hours to go to some movie theater that was showing it. Now, I know it was probably because, you know, the movie theater is far away, but like she had to pretty much bribe and like get so much permission from her parents to even do that. Do you find that in your case, have you heard of, you know, a lot of parents that are in India, you know, seeing K-pop as not, you know, a necessary thing to, you know, their enjoyment? Do you think there's a point when they might accept it?
Indian system and the parenting style and the whole family structure is totally different from Western families, to be more accurate. And, you know, like not encouraging entertainment is actually a very habitual habit of our Indian parents. So in my opinion, it is basically because Indian population weren't used to spending a lot of money or time towards entertainment. So I'm not sure if you heard it, but there's kind of a talk where Indians are listed to be more workaholics and more into studies and education and work all the time. Mm-hmm. So it is not just now. Now it might be K-pop, but we all must agree that our parents were also restricted by their parents when they were going crazy over Beatles and Michael Jackson. So it continues. Yeah, the same stigma continues. And when those days, Michael Jackson's English and those English songs felt over the clouds because people weren't able to understand English. And when kids said that they loved Michael Jackson, they might have felt like, this is so different from our culture and you like him dancing like that and things like that. But now, you know, like English music has become a usual thing because we all learn our education through English, and English is mostly spoken by most of the school students and college, and even parents, you know, like parents, they agree that English is becoming a wider spoken language in India. So now they are getting used to English movies and English songs, but they're still new to K-pop because, you know, like again, it's a new language and they feel uncomfortable with their kids listening to songs which they don't understand. They don't feel it fine because they don't actually kind of really realize or understand what is actually happening on the screen. It's too much of flashy or too much of energy, which kind of makes them feel odd one out. So that is the reason. And again, to be more specific from my point of view, we have this kind of a thought where we don't spend much on entertainment, as I told you before. Like even if it's movies or music, we kind of restrict our money being paid for the movies or the music we listen to, like movies we watch and music we listen to. So when they find that their kids are actually spending an umpteen number of amount to buy albums or to go to a movie, they kind of feel odd. Because you know that again the currency plays a major role, because when we want to purchase an album, it kind of costs us so much because of all the transport and the taxes we have to pay. So it is quite difficult for fans to get access to the official merch that the artists actually put out. And we get them so late, like after a month of the release, we used to get our albums, our pre-ordered albums. So that's how much time it takes and the effort we put in. Mm. So that kind of makes them feel bad. And it's like they feel as if there are only few artists and their kids are actually obsessed with that particular person or something. Mm. But K-pop has different genres and different artists and lots and lots of things to keep track on. It's not like you have a particular person singing and dancing and you keep watching the same music video. Well, we do stream, but again, that particular artist goes and like advocates in a K-drama, or he kind of asks his fans to support his juniors, or he wants his fans to check out his senior group, or he kind of, you know, like keeps us updated. So it's like we get to see new things every time we log into our social media. So it's like we have to keep track on everything. But again, this system is kind of totally different and it's beyond clouds for our parents. So they don't really understand and agree. But we do have fans, parents who are totally supportive. They enjoy listening to music. And I myself have a very best friend whose mother is actually a fan of SHINee, Minho.
Oh, yeah.
And she loves listening to SHINee, but she is kind of shy to actually express it to the outer world. Even when my friend, you know, like casually comments that my mom was watching this music video, and the aunt will be like kind of restrained and she will feel shy to express that to us, because it is again, they feel that it is not a good thing to follow K-pop. I'm not sure. They feel that their pride is kind of coming down if they become K-pop fans or something. I might be wrong, but they are kind of restricted, as we were 5 years ago. Even K-pop fans, we weren't speaking much about K-pop, and I'm sure that every country had that phase before, like when they felt shy and small for liking K-pop. And now after 5 years, we are ready to speak about K-pop and we are ready to proclaim ourselves as K-pop fans. And I'm sure that parents will start speaking up about K-pop in coming up years too. And one particular point is that we can't actually force parents, because it's like more 50-50, like few people still doesn't enjoy K-pop. Even our friends don't. And that is the same with parents too. Like you can't force them to accept your daughters or sons who are into K-pop. Some will definitely enjoy it. And there's again the 50 where they feel that this is not their cup of tea and they strictly doesn't want their kids to go behind the entertainment field. So it's again 50-50. There's always good and bad, and there's always people who love K-pop and people who don't feel that K-pop is their style.
That's interesting that you talk about how, like, even just entertainment in general is not, you know, it's kind of frowned upon. Bollywood, you know, as we all know, is a super profitable industry in terms of film. Now, I wonder, like, and they kind of did this in the Exciting India thing where they kind of, you know, they went to a couple of Bollywood studios or film sets. Do you think that there's a chance, you know, that Bollywood would ever mesh with K-pop? And if that happens, maybe that would be able to sway your parents into, you know, believing that it was worth your time, or that there is something there to be into?
No, like two type of entertainment worlds coming together is totally possible, because we are seeing a lots and lots of Indian Bollywood artists who actually recognize K-pop as one of their favorite music bands. And we do have fans for BTS and EXO in our own field. Like, we published an article in Let's K-pop India months back, where we listed 4 to 5 artists who are actually fond of K-pop, like people like Arman Malik, and you know, like, he is a very good you know, like, famous music producer, and he is into EXO, and he loves he also confessed that he would love to work with them. And we have Shah Rukh Khan is actually one of the most known actors in Bollywood. So his daughter also confessed her, you know, like, interest in K-pop, and she actually stated that she would love to date EXO's Suho. So
what? Okay,
let us pretend as we never heard that. So so we have A.R. Rahman, who is again one of the most renowned musician, and he also spoke about BTS in his latest interview with Rolling Stone India. So,
oh, I saw that. Yeah.
So there are lots of people who are getting in touch. And again, K-pop idols talk about India, and Eric Nam mentioning that he loves Bollywood, and Bang Chan, even Stray Kids Bang Chan, mentioned in one of his lives that he used to listen to K-pop, Bollywood music. And we have Jackson from GOT7, who also mentioned that he loves listening to Bollywood. So as days and years go on, it keeps increasing. And, you know, like, recently we had our GOT7 release, and one of the tracks was actually produced by an Indian music producer. He's from Kerala. He's Appu Krishnan. So we had an interview, and he's in LA right now. He's in Los Angeles, and he participated in Trust My Love song, the fifth or sixth track in the album. And he has also worked for 101's most beloved anthem, Pick Me, which is actually the title track of Produce 101 season 2. So he was part of the song. Yeah, he wrote for it. And he also wrote for Just Two. I'm not sure if he's a writer. He arranged the song for Just Two. So things are happening. So he also mentioned that he would love to meet GOT7 one day. And I'm sure that when he's going to meet them, he's definitely going to talk about India and the fans and the love they receive. So it might sound superficial for now, but I am sure that people are trying to combine the industries together and bring out some beautiful pieces out. And to add more points, I would rather appreciate them to understand each, you know, like, one another's culture and bring a very positive music, rather than, you know, like, discriminating each other without knowing, without recognizing each and everyone's culture. So that's again there where people have to be careful while, you know, like, mixing up entertainment fields. So I hope they do that too. With parents, I am not sure, because still entertainment is entertainment, and people are people, parents are parents. I'm not sure. But maybe we can have 25 to 30% of parents who might agree that that K-pop is a very good platform for their kids to, you know, like, enjoy and also learn in the same time.
You know, one of the things that you do is you work to spread the word more. You know, like I said in the intro, you write for Destination K-pop, and you also write, you know, and curate, or you're the founder and curator of Let's K-Pop India. You write with The Craze. You guested on Soul Beats. So what is your goal with what you're doing in, you know, your sort of professional K-pop fandom world, what do you hope to, you know, do in the end with all of this?
More like personally, it would be, you know, like recognizing the artists and, you know, like bringing the K-pop acts closer to Indian fandom. You know, like right now we don't have much coverage on various artists. You know, like still there are people who still believe that BTS, EXO and GOT7 are the popular groups that are there. And they still need to know lots and lots of groups. Like, I'm not talking about the entire K-pop community, but the creamy level, we should agree that there are lots and lots of fans who support, you know, like major groups, and there are a few groups that are unnoticed. And I personally, as a writer, would love to take those groups to people because, to be frank, even if I'm not a writer, I'm not sure if I will check their songs. And luckily, I got to be a writer and I got a chance to actually taste those groups' music videos and their aura. So I would like to be the medium who actually takes them to the fans. So, and I try to be as simple as possible with my language so that it kind of reaches to every set, you know, like every part of the Indian community where people actually find my articles easy to read and also fun and engaging. So yeah, that's there. And also representing Indian community is also one of the dreams because you know, like we do have great people like Riddhi who is you know, like representing us in a very good way, and she has met lots and lots of artists, and it is I'm really grateful being, you know, like I would consider myself as the second generation K-pop writers because we have the first generation who has been establishing themselves very well. And we are kind of, you know, like lifted up by their charisma and their aura, and they actually motivate us to do much greater things. And I hope we could, you know, like move in as a community in recognizing every K-pop artist as much as we possibly can.
Nice. Wow. So you said you're a part of the second generation? As in like generation of Indian writers or just in general?
I would personally consider myself as second generation writer on the whole because there's first generation where we have Tamar and Jeff Benjamin, you know, like I consider them as the first generation because they have strived so hard in bringing K-pop to media platforms. And we kind of use those platforms to make K-pop even more popular. So they established the genre as K-pop in the media. And we are trying to popularize it more. So later, maybe the third generation might, you know, like reach out to every part of the world. Just like the K-pop world, there is, I believe that there is a K-pop writer community, and it is kind of a very healthy community. And I'm happy that I'm part of that.
That's awesome. Wow. I didn't realize there were like generations or, you know, I see what you're saying, but I've never thought about it like that. But that totally makes sense. Now, like before, you know, you said that GOT7, you know, kind of had BTS and GOT7 are the biggest groups in, or seemingly, you know, most popular in India. You just wrote about GOT7's comeback. What are your thoughts on it? You kind of explained before this call that there, and I didn't know this, I watched the video, but I didn't realize there was a Romeo and Juliet sort of theme to it. Do you want to explain that a little and what you found in writing your article?
Yeah, so basically it all started with the first trailer they had. It was actually in English, and it was more like a cinematic trailer where they introduced the whole team of the upcoming comeback. And there they had this monologue where a narrator narrates about not swearing by the moon, and which is actually the taken lines from Shakespearean play Romeo and Juliet, the famous Romeo and Juliet. So it basically, it's the GOT7 members who take the roles as Romeos. And fortunately, we Agassiz, we get to take the role as Juliets. And it is more like a story plot where the same happens, you know, like Juliet first dies. The actual story is kind of different, like Juliet pretends to die and Romeo thinks that she's dead and he takes the poison and then he actually dies and then Juliet wakes up and finds Romeo dead and again she takes the actual poison. So it's
right.
It's the story like that there. But here we find that Juliet actually dies first, and GOT7 members get to know that, and it's like there's a line where Bamim sings, "I want to die with you." So it's more like not by the moon, because swear not by the moon is where the moon is changing, it changes in position and shape. So it's more like where it changes and it's not constant, the moon.
Yeah.
But when we swear to each other, it's more like constant because we both will be staying together for each other. So that's the entire concept where the members and fans as lovers, we promise each other on behalf of each other. So if you live, I live. If you die and I die. So when Juliet is found dead, you can see scenes like Marked One having his a robe or a dress kind of thing, a white dress, which actually represents Juliet's costume. And we can see Yongjae lying on a coffin, which is Juliet's coffin. So these kind of sceneries kind of depict the actual story plot for us. And we get to see the GOT7 members standing in the balcony and waiting for the Juliet when the Juliet doesn't come to the place. It is actually one of the most famous spot in the Romeo Juliet. Actually, Romeo always visits Juliet in the balcony scene.
Yeah, right.
So the members come together and search for Juliet and they find her missing. And later when they find her dead, you can see few men disguised in black wardrobe with masks. They kind of moan looking at a coffin. It is kind of, in my opinion, there must be Juliet lying on the coffin, dead, and they are mourning for her. And there's kind of a tomb kind of setup, but the members walk in with a baby bird in Yugim's hand, and he lets it fly.
Yeah, right.
So it's more like, to be more deep, I would say that during your hard times, you might feel as if you can, you know, like, stop living or just stop everything. But we give you the, you know, the color of baby bird that is being an I Got Seven, and they give that color to us. So it's like, you can color, I don't exactly remember the exact lines, but it's more like, I would like to be colored with your color and I would like to give my colors for you. So it's more like a sacrificing kind of love. So I want you to live with my colors. So they let the bird fly and the whole tomb kind of falls down. It wrecks. So it kind of symbolizes that the Juliet is coming back to life. We can also contemplate this scene with Jesus' resurrection, because we get to see the imagery where the tomb kind of cracks open and falls down when Jesus raised on the third day. So it's similarly the same where the moon cracks open, even the celestial object might disappear, and it's more like we can even fake death by being together forever. So there's a moon cracking open. There's the tomb falling down. Mm-hmm. So basically, in the end, GOT7 tries to bring a twist in the usual Romeo-Juliet story where they get to bring back Juliet to life and be together forever.
Wow. Wow. I did not know that. I should have honestly expected that. I know that GOT7 has like a storyline sort of thing, but this kind of seems like it breaks away from that storyline. Like, you know, where Jin Young is almost dead, but his members are not dead, and you know, that kind of thing. Does it connect? Do you feel like it connects at all?
I'm not so strong with theories, but I think this is kind of a different one because the members confess that it is more, you know, like the theory follows from calling my name.
Yeah.
So in calling my name, they say that they want the lover to trust them. And here they ask the same and they actually, you know, like stand up for the trust and the love. So I think let us not compare the other theories, but this actually felt, you know, like it had its own story and plot, according to me. So it was a good one.
Ah, okay. Yeah. Okay. Well, props to God Seven. With the, when I first saw that teaser, they were riding in that carriage sort of thing. I was like, oh, are they going back to like the 1800s? Like, where are they? Like, I was intrigued by that, really. I thought that was really cool how they kind of introed it with that. But thank you, Anzia, for taking the time to be a guest with us. Do you have anything that you want to promote, you know, whether it's your publications or if you have an upcoming article, that kind of thing?
Thank you. Thank you for having me. So it's more like, yes, I'm a writer, so you can, you know, like get to read all my articles and Destination K-pop and the craze. You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram to know whatever the articles I write. And for Let's K-pop India, it's actually a group of college students. We get together and we write subjective articles on K-pop. And it would be great if you guys would check it out. And we also have our own magazine, paperback magazine, hashtag K-pop magazine, which is currently being issued in India. And I hope that we could also reach a global market soon. So also keep your eyes on that. And I would really love to get in contact with you guys. So always feel free to DM me. And I would really love to talk a lot about K-pop with you guys. Thank you.
Oh, nice. Yes, and Thea is very enthusiastic. She loves SF9 too, if any. What's the name of SF9's fandom?
It's Fantasy.
Fantasy. I knew it. Okay. I knew that. Oh, I'm cutting that out.
I was waiting. I thought you would never ask about it.
No, I really enjoy I like a lot of their title songs, and I do like some of their B-sides, but after watching Sky Castle, I recognized Chani, and then I was like, oh, wait, he hosts with Hyunjin and Nan, right? No. Mina, yeah. So then I was like, SF9, okay. I knew their fandom was Fantasy, but either way, thank you so much, Anthea. Anthea might be coming on as a co-host at some point in a couple episodes, so look out for that. But yeah, make sure to go, you know, check out the publication she writes for, and yeah, reach out. Wait, did you mention, sorry, I blanked. Did you mention your Instagram?
No, it is at Anthea Isaac. It is, you know, like the same name for Twitter too, so you can find me there. ANTHEAISAAC, Anthea Isaac.
Cool. All right. Well, yeah, you guys can find her there. You can find me at EMIHAYDEL. We do have a Discord going on, so you guys can go check it out. Or if you want the link, I will give it to you if you just shoot me a DM. So thank you guys for listening, and we will see y'all next week.
Thank you for listening to Believe. You can show support to your host by subscribing to the show and giving us a 5-star rating on your preferred platform. Check us out at Believe.com and search for BLEAV on YouTube.